If you're a fan of our show, then you might also like another podcast, Twimmel AI. That's This Week in Machine Learning and Artificial Intelligence. It's perfect for anyone looking for a deep dive into every conceivable corner of ML and AI. Whether it's deep learning and transfer learning, or what makes better sequence models and intelligent workforce automation possible, that's all just the tip of the iceberg. Today, I'm delighted to welcome Sam Charrington, the host and man behind This Week in Machine Learning and AI, to the show. I'm going to be turning the tables on Sam and putting him in the hot seat as I pick his brain about the insights and trends he's gleaned from interviewing more than 150 of the top ML and AI experts in the world. Don't go anywhere. I'm John Pryle, and welcome to the Georgian Impact Podcast. So, Sam, welcome to the show. What a pleasure to talk with you.
Awesome. Thanks, John. It's great to be on the show.
So tell me a bit more about your background and how you ended up evolving, you know, kind of from tech and product to journalism and more.
It's funny. People will occasionally refer to me as a journalist, and it always freaks me out a little bit. Because I know some folks who, you know, who've gone to school for that, and it's weird. I've got a couple of engineering degrees, both in electrical engineering. My first exposure to AI, in fact, was picking up a book on a bargain bin when I was in grad school at Northwestern, and it was written by a prof there. And that kind of laid dormant until 6 years ago. I left the startup I was at where I was running product management and marketing and started this kind of industry research firm with the vision of, it is just seeing really clearly that enterprises were being presented with so much data that they would need a new set of tools in order to intelligently use that. And so I started focusing on both kind of what were at that time more established technologies like cloud and big data, but also machine learning platforms and frameworks and toolkits and that kind of stuff. And I've been kind of neck deep in that ever since.
Indeed. And actually, I referred you to more than journalism. And it's this, you know, that you've been a principal analyst at Cloud Plus Strategies, and you are advising businesses and technology leaders on these pieces. And I think we'll try to use some of that as we pick your brain this morning. Now, your Twimmel Talk podcast, if I did my math right, you're well over 1.5 million listens. You're always on the top 10 list of ML and AI podcasts. You know, you clearly have found the need, and you serve it well. So congratulations.
Thank you.
So as you look back over the past, that's more than 150 podcasts now, what do you think is the most surprising or insightful learnings that you've come across?
Oh man, there's just so much happening in this space. It's incredible. It changes, you know, day to day. You know, the thing that I come back to often is trying to stay grounded. Yeah, I kind of straddle these two worlds, if you will. I'm talking to researchers that are way ahead in kind of the research and application of machine learning and AI. But kind of fundamentally, I tend to think a lot about, you know, what traditional enterprises are doing and what they need. And within that latter crowd, it's, you know, they get a ton of value out of very, very simple techniques or the application of relatively simple techniques. So, you know, while on the one hand, I get excited about things like reinforcement learning. Reinforcement learning is a technique that is on the cutting edge. It's the closest we have to teaching computers how to learn the way humans learn. But at the same time, for most enterprises, you know, they're not there yet. They're, you know, they could get a ton of value just by, you know, more judiciously applying simple techniques like regression to you know, figuring out customer churn and, you know, these rather pedestrian use cases.
Yeah, what a perfect setup. Because as I was thinking about how I want to kind of talk to you about trends, and you often do drill down and get amazing explanations of much of the leading edge tech that's out there at ML and AI. But if I walk you through my short and sweet definition with my enterprise hat on, obviously they're starting with data. They're collecting more and more data. They're analyzing it and they're applying techniques, and it's machine learning techniques and it's evolving to AI techniques. We're not going to get into the definitions and debates over what those terms mean. But if we think about the front end, you know, just getting that data, do you get the sense that companies recognize the challenge and are still focusing on making sure the data they have is right and that they're leveraging the tools correctly? Or are they moving beyond that now? Where are they on that evolutionary stage?
It depends a lot on the type of enterprise. The technology companies are a lot further along. With the traditional enterprises, I tend to find that, you know, most of them jumped on the big data wave 7-10 years ago and just started collecting. And so part of their challenge is rationalizing and kind of figuring out these different silos that they've established and, you know, dealing with issues of data quality and data cleansing, things like that. Because fundamentally, you know, I think the background to your question is the recognition that fundamentally to do anything with machine learning and AI, you've got to have your data house in order, right? You've got to be able to access data that helps you, you know, use it to solve a given problem. And, you know, for a lot of enterprises, the data is there, but it's gaining easy access to it that's a challenge. So, you know, you often talk to data scientists and their experience is that they spend 10% of their time doing kind of fancy modeling and all this stuff that we think of when we think of data science, and 80, 90% of their time, you know, just wrangling data, getting it from one place to another, getting it out of one place, and cleansing it, you know, dealing with data quality issues, things like that. So there's a ton of work that companies, you know, end up doing in that space in order to take advantage of ML and AI.
Wow. So they got that 90%. So you think they're getting enough help then from the product teams that are kind of bringing the end user needs and the company strategy down to these tech teams sitting in those dark rooms somewhere?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you know, we start talking about technology companies, I think, you know, I think they tend to be a bit further along on the maturity curve. So, you know, they've got the advantage oftentimes of being, you know, quote unquote, born on the web or born in the cloud. And, you know, they're often solving narrower problems. And so, you know, they've got most of the data that they need or much of the data that they need in one place. And the where the product team comes in is really helping them very narrowly and cleanly define the problem that they're trying to solve with ML and AI. Because one of the worst things that you can do is go after ML and AI for its own sake. I think there's a place for that, particularly for large enterprises. I often advise folks to kind of, you know, force yourselves down the ML and AI path because it's just going to be such a critical technology that you don't want to be caught flat-footed. So, you know, force yourself to find some problems to solve, even if they're toy problems. But for tech companies, you know, the product team's role is to really identify ways to create user value with machine learning and AI. And then, you know, in doing so and in constraining the role of the ML and AI projects, that gives the technology teams really the boundaries that they need to move quickly.
And I think I love the point. And as you know, we're very focused. And this is kind of really the last step of the evolutionary journey I was talking about earlier. They now have the predictions and the tools and they've got their data in order. And we want to see this work applied to a business process, in creating a new business process, improving a business process, you know, the application of AI, applied AI. What's your sense of where companies are on that part of the curve? Are they getting close? Or do you think many are there across kind of the spectrum of industries you see?
Yeah, generally, the way I think of the market maturity broadly is that for traditional enterprises, large companies, most of them over the past 5 or so years have been on this path of picking, you know, some proofs of concepts, some starter projects, technical toe dips, and really running those through the paces. And we're over the past year or so, you know, really starting to see the successes there. And so now moving into a phase where they are working to kind of build out their, you know, their processes, their technology platforms so that they can scale these machine learning efforts more broadly.
You made me think about, it wasn't that many podcasts ago, you were, I think, talking to Capital One. And you talk about how to get started, where they evolve. So I thought it was interesting because there are some things that are maybe along the line of the drone or something simple. I guess I'm being naive and calling it simple, but whether it's fraud detection or money laundering, but eventually we're all going to get to, automated back office processing. We're seeing lots of robotic process automation that are getting big boosts from AI. So I think we have to help them all understand their journey. Each industry, each company is going to be on a different rate and pace on this journey.
Right. That's definitely the case. Because I think a lot about platform technologies, I tend to think of first the kind of ML and AI applications and tools that companies are building and customizing heavily for their own uses. But it's also important to recognize that a lot of enterprise exposure to ML and AI is going to come via vendors, startups, other technology suppliers kind of baking ML and AI into their own offerings. And so for those vendors, it's going to be key to take advantage of machine learning to make their products smarter because their customers are going to ultimately expect that.
So we're hoping that obviously the CEOs are going to guide their staff and bring forward the leadership for the right product or the right market and satisfying the customers. And these obviously tech teams have a lot to learn. Obviously, they're going to keep listening to you as well. Do you think at the end of the day, the base platforms, whether it's something offered by a Facebook or an Amazon or an IBM Watson or any of these larger vendors, do they become more or less relevant over time?
Yeah, there are some interesting questions there, including the ability to create generalizable AI platforms. Platforms are something that I've always been, very excited about, whether we're talking about cloud, big data, analytics, AI. But often there's this last mile problem when it comes to building out machine learning and AI applications, meaning you can kind of do some broad things with general purpose technologies, but to really solve the specific problem that you have, you've got to be training on your data as opposed to some data set that some providers provided. And you've got to have some flexibility to be able to manipulate that data and often manipulate the training process and the modeling process. And so, I'm very optimistic that we'll get there and that companies will kind of find broad value in machine learning platforms that exist in kind of this middle ground between low-level frameworks like your TensorFlows and your PyTorches and high-level AI as a service offerings like all the cloud vendors provide, your IBM Watsons and your various cognitive services. But, there's still work to be done there.
I like the analogy and calling it the last mile. It's we kind of make an assumption often that every company we talk to is building data science teams and they're already there. And maybe that's true to some degree at large companies. I think it's probably not true across the entire spectrum of the tech industry leveraging this. And your analogy holds really well. They're going to have to, figure out what tools to use, but they're going to have to make it work for them.
Right.
They're going to really figure out what their solution is going to be, pick the right technology, but then own it. Right? They're going to have to own
right,
it.
Right. Yeah.
So a little change of gears. You've also spoken to some really interesting leading edge thinkers and professors. And I know you were excited to talk to Garry Kasparov. I was excited that you talked to Garry Kasparov. But I think there's a lot have been taken for granted that this is the old tech idea. Just throw the data into an ML system. Technology is going to work and give you the answers. Life was good. And it's very clear now we're turning this very interesting corner around trust and bias. And I'd really love to hear your views on how this is going to become important over the next days, weeks, months, years, right?
Yeah, it's critical. And in fact, we're pulling together a AI and ethics series of podcasts to really explore this a lot further. But I think the quote that most exemplifies the challenge for me comes from an interview that I did with Mustafa Cisse, who was a research scientist at Facebook AI Research until very recently. It was announced last week, I think. It was announced that he would be leading up a new research center in Ghana for Google AI, working with Jeff Dean. And in the podcast, he said that the podcast I did with him not too long ago, he said that the data that we feed our models is essentially food, right? And you are what you eat. And right now, we're often feeding our models junk food, right? That's the problem. And, you know, there's a lot that needs to be done. It's imperative for organizations to really understand this idea that data is inherently biased, you know, not positive or negative. It's just all data has biases. And what machine learning models do is figure out those patterns, which are those biases, and make decisions based on them. And so if you don't understand the biases that are inherent in your training data sets, you can't understand the behavior of your models. And so there's a lot of activity happening now around trying to create tools to help companies, you know, understand their data. I was just reading earlier about a Facebook project an internal platform that they've built called Fairness Flow that helps their developers understand algorithmic bias. There's a Microsoft research postdoc, Timnit Gebru, who has done some work on, you know, proposing that folks that publish data sets or collect data sets create data sheets, kind of like traditional engineering data sheets about their data sets that prompt the folks that are curating these data sets to think about and write about the biases that may be inherent in them. And so I think it's only in really understanding these, you know, these biases in data, which create biases in model behaviors, that we'll be able to get to a point where we're able to trust the decisions that these models are recommending for us.
Yeah, I'm encouraged. That's a great story on the tech side. And I'm encouraged on the non-tech side, you know, whether it's Kathy O'Neill getting weapons of mass destruction going, you know, more mainstream than a tech book. We're getting more recognition of bias being more than what we typically think of and read the, you know, page one of every paper on people's biases, but we're seeing recognition of cognitive bias, that humans are making decisions based on what they want the answer to be, not what they are basing it on facts at all. So I think when the two get merged together, I think it'll help everybody kind of together recognize that everything needs to move forward. And whether it's at the tech side or on the human side, we're going to hopefully get through this in a better way and come out of the knothole in better shape, both society and technology. Well, I didn't know where we're going to end this, but that I don't think we can be any more profound than that. Sam Sharrington, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Good to see you again. You know, thanks for taking the time with us.
Great to see you, John, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on the show.
Thanks for listening. If you like what we're doing, we'd appreciate your telling other people about the show. Better yet, give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or write a review. Doing so will really help ensure that more people can find us. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the Impact Podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you go to find your podcast.